Welcome to the Titanium Economy Podcast, where we showcase leaders from across the industrial sector as they share their valuable experiences, expertise, strategies, and more. These in-depth conversations with the brains behind the businesses lift the lid on how success is cultivated within the titanium economy.
Today we have with us Dr. Howard Grimes, who is the CEO at Timan E, which is the Cybersecurity Manufacturing Innovation Institute. Funded by the U.S. Department of Energy, Timan E connects cybersecurity and energy efficiency to create manufacturing solutions that keep America's companies competitive and protected. Dr. Grimes himself is a noted research scientist and author with 25 years of success in directing complex university and national laboratory research programs and entrepreneurial startup initiatives. During his illustrious career in research, leadership, and innovation, he has held notable positions at the University of Texas at San Antonio, Idaho National Laboratory, and Washington State University, among others. Dr. Grimes, we are delighted to have you with us today. A very warm welcome and very excited to hear your insights and experiences.
It's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to sharing information.
Perfect. So let's get started. Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about the genesis of Timan E in terms of what are its goals and objectives?
Right. So let me start actually with the Manufacturing USA Innovation Institutes in general. So there are 17 Manufacturing USA Innovation Institutes in America right now. Another one is being stood up as we speak as a result of the CHIPS and Science Act. In fact, I've got three people there for a reverse site visit today that's going on with one of those competitive teams. The Manufacturing USA is held at the Department of Commerce and is funded directly from the U.S. Congress. It was brought into existence about 10 years ago, frankly, in recognition of the waning power of U.S. manufacturing in a globally competitive landscape. So the Manufacturing USA Institutes are all really about one thing, and that is increasing, you know, U.S. manufacturing and elevating our global competitive posture. So all of the other institutes, really focus in vertical areas like lightweight composite materials, next generation electronics, flexible electronics, et cetera. CIMANI, the Cybersecurity Manufacturing Innovation Institute, is exclusively focused on cybersecurity. And that's critical. As we know already, to become competitive and certainly a hill or a cornerstone of the titanium economy is, digitizing your environments in order to increase your productivity. But as we all know now, the more you digitize, the more cyber vulnerable you become. And so it's absolutely critical that CIMANI exists so that we can really think from the bottom up in an integrated, holistic manner about what the future of cybersecurity is, especially for manufacturing. So the Department of Energy understood that, current approaches are simply not good enough, to say the least. You can look at any TV news station, any newspaper in America or across the globe today and realize, the cyber threats are growing in volume, in sophistication. They're increasingly better funded, which means that they become increasingly better at breaching, even highly fortified postures. So CIMANI, our mantra, if you will, is we are the most creative and innovative cyber defense team in the world. And that's our job, is to apply the capabilities and expertise in the Institute to make companies, U.S. manufacturers specifically, competitive in this global environment. The last thing I'll say is that we face in enormous attack vectors right now. And most of us in CIMANI have the proper and appropriate security clearances to really understand those threat vectors and how those threat vectors are evolving. So one of our differentiators is our ability to, if you will, look around the corner a bit and see what's coming and develop defensive architectures that think ahead of those threats. Our goals and objectives are just that, you know, make America companies safer, more resilient, and more energy efficient in the process. So, you know, we very much focus on converting cybersecurity from a cost center to a profit center. And the way that we do that is to focus on cyber innovations, cyber defense innovations that capitalize on energy efficiency gains, which decrease your production costs.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, Grimes. So let's go a little bit deeper into what you said, right? That in terms of the US manufacturing sector, it's a national priority to elevate its posture right now at a global level, right? And there are multiple offices led by or instituted by the Congress to help with that, one of them being Simon E. And here you are working through cyber innovation to be able to fulfill that objective. As you're doing that, can you talk about some of the challenges that you face when you're seeing some of these cybersecurity threats and how the sector right now is engaged to deal with them?
I think the greatest threat that we all face is the fact that products are brought to market in a context of being first to market as opposed to being secure to market. So the primary threat vector is that our digitized environments are vulnerable by design. And so that's a clear way of thinking about it. There is a mythology out there, frankly, that says that if you buy these firewalls and, you know, create these air gaps, look at, you know, endpoint security, that you're going to be cyber hardened. You are to some extent, but the products that you're trying, the networks you're trying to secure, the machines you're trying to secure are vulnerable by design. And so we really have to rethink that in a grand challenge way. So the bad actors, the nation state adversaries, et cetera, continue to pour resources into compromising our systems. U.S. manufacturing, by the data, is the number one sector targeted, cyber targeted by nation state adversaries. So why is that? So, you know, really, there's multiple reasons for that. Not enough time here to discuss all of them in detail. But at the highest level, you know, disrupting U.S. manufacturing cripples our economy, and it cripples our ability to engage in kinetic wars across the world. And so our adversaries are keenly interested in compromising our capabilities at the right time. And so we have to prepare for that in the sense of, you know, safeguarding or cyber securing U.S. manufacturing doesn't just protect our manufacturers, but it also protects our national economy and our resiliency as a nation to respond to any number of global threats.
Got it. And Dr. Grimes, very interesting that you talk about that now more than ever, it's important to protect the U.S. manufacturing sector from all our adversaries, given how important it is to the economy. And it's also at a greater threat today than probably it ever was, right? Could you talk about some of the initiatives that you are leading at Simon E to be able to do that, to protect the U.S. manufacturing sector from some of the cyber threats?
Yes, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, we are the most innovative cyber defense team in the world. And we bring, how do we do that? So we are a public-private partnership, again, as a member of Manufacturing USA. So we have, you know, best-in-class talent from the best research universities across the nation. We have best-in-talent capability and expertise from four of the Department of Energy's national laboratories: the Idaho National Lab, Oak Ridge National Lab, Sandia, and the National Renewable Energy Lab. And we have multiple companies that are aligned with us as members. These include General Electric, Lockheed Martin, Cisco, but also many, many small and medium manufacturers as well. So it's really aggregation of that, what I call best in nation approach to securing U.S. manufacturing. So we are funded to work at a very fundamental R&D level. So we're not funded to apply existing solutions to cybersecurity. We are funded to develop new innovations that will far exceed current cyber defense capabilities. So we do that by focusing on a number of different technology innovation areas. The first one we call the Secure Defensible Architectures and Cyber Physical Passports. So the Cyber Secure Defensible Architectures protects your factory floor, and the Cyber Physical Passports protect and the provenance of your supply chains. So for the first time, supply chains are parts are born qualified, and the entire supply chain is rooted in trust. We also have developed a revolutionary approach to detection and mitigation of cyber vulnerabilities at a scale previously impossible. So all of us in the private world, you know, we all know about Patch Tuesday, or we all know about software updates, and almost the top line in every software update you get is, this update addresses known security bugs. And the problem with that is it's not a scalable phenomenon. The number of vulnerabilities is in the multiple trillions. And so, you know, patching those vulnerabilities in the current methodology is not a scalable exercise. So we've developed a whole nother different approach where we capture thousands of cyber vulnerabilities within single, what we call cyber weakness enumerations. And then we've developed AI attack annexes to prioritize those vulnerabilities so that they can be addressed again in a priority fashion and at a scale previously not possible. We also have a whole technical team assembled around what we call cybersecurity, energy, and emissions quantification. And that's where we link cybersecurity defenses to energy efficiency gains. And we've been able to demonstrate in multiple industrial environments with private companies, private and public companies, that, you know, by introducing our cyber defense or our secure defensible architectures, we can validate that we can get energy efficiency savings of between 10 and 18%. And this is a big percentage, which equals a big dollar amount for your company. So we're really focused on that. We also have developed in concert with the Department of Energy, what we call our secure R&D infrastructure. So it's not a classified infrastructure, but it is it approaches that level of cybersecurity as we proceed. Recently, we branched out into what we call industry use cases. So we're engaged with about 12 companies right now. And we've got about $5 million of investment out there with these companies to deploy secure defensible architectures, cyber physical passports, and cyber vulnerability detection and mitigation at scale in real world, you know, in actual existing factories. So we're working hard to get our innovations out of, you know, the lab, so to speak, and into industry deployment. That's a huge amount of what we're doing. We're uniquely positioned to do this work, frankly, because of our expertise, our technical expertise across our team. And we're almost 350 strong. We have these folks and entities under subcontract. So you come to us with a new problem, we can deploy a solution-based team very, very quickly because we have the subcontracts already in existence. And that allows us to work in a very agile, industry-facing fashion with high efficiency. So, but you peel the onion back, and you know, what we do that's different than anyone else is we get at the fundamental mathematics, the fundamental physics, and the fundamental systems, design systems, to really think about cybersecurity in a whole new way. So we're the you know, were the first ones that really talked about, you know, application of mathematical formal methods to verification of security guarantees and fundamental physics. And these now, you know, 5 years later, these are now highlighted in, you know, presidential reports on how should the nation approach cybersecurity. And we're thrilled, you know, to see that the basic building blocks document that just came out, you know, talks about the need for more formal methods, because we're kind of, we put our arms in the air first and said, we need to do this. And so we've succeeded, I think, in showing the power of these methods, as well as how well they work in industrial environments.
Got it. And very fascinating, Dr. Grimes. So just going back to what you said, that you currently have about 12 companies that you're working with to deploy the cybersecurity initiatives. So there's a lot of emerging trends on the technology side, like AI, machine learning, and so on and so forth. Could you talk a little bit about how some of these trends are impacting the way that you are trying to deploy cybersecurity measures at some of these companies that you're working with?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me answer that in two ways. One is, how are we using it? And then a little glimpse into how our adversaries are beginning to use it as well.
Sure.
So our way that we use AI and ML and other techniques like that is primarily in the design phase. So we talk about secure by design, and you can use AI and related technologies to drastically increase the efficiency of generation of secure by design architecture. So we are actively doing that. The second area that we're actively engaging AI in is back to the, how do we detect and mitigate cyber vulnerabilities at a scale that is needed and is not possible today. So we have developed what we call Symani attack annexes. And we're now bringing the full power of AI and ML and large language models to those attack annexes to ramp up their efficiency of operations. We're probably going to be spending a major amount of money here in the next year or so on developing our own high performance computing cluster to support that AI compute power that's needed. Now, let me switch gears and give you a very simple, straightforward example of what our adversaries will be doing very soon. No documented cases of it thus far, but it's going to happen. So if you look at U.S. manufacturing, if you break out all the kinds of threats, you know, denial of service, man in the middle, you know, all those different, you know, types of attacks, the number one attack right now in America is ransomware. And of those ransomware attacks in America, over 80% of those attacks are because of, quote, the human in the loop. And so it's human error. They do something they shouldn't do. So our entire approach to workforce development right now, you know, is focused on how do we educate humans to not respond inappropriately to phishing attacks, spearing attacks, whale attacks, et cetera. And the way that we do that, and anyone that's been trained understands that, you know, look closely at the email, look at the header, right? Look at the, are there misspellings? Are there things that are incorrect? And so we can teach you today to detect phishing attacks relatively straightforwardly because our adversaries do make those kind of simple mistakes. What they're now going to do is they're going to use their own AI to clean those up and make those look like it came from Howard to directly to them. And that's going to make it a lot more vulnerable. It's going to increase that human in the loop factor enormously. So we're already thinking about, well, how do we then design, you know, approaches that understand that those attack vectors are going to be a lot more sophisticated tomorrow than they are today? And how do we think about that in a proactive, integrated sense?
Got it. And Dr. Grimes, just shifting gears at this point to talk a little bit about your own journey, because You've been a promoter, organizer, and now, of course, the CEO of First of Its Kind Cybersecurity Manufacturing Innovation Institute, right? So what has been your key motivation behind all of this?
The vitality of the U.S. nation, I think, is my primary motivation. So I've had a lot of really great jobs, you know, inside of academia. I was a dean. I was a vice president for research in, you know, DOE National Labs. I was a convener of, you know, or interfacer from industry onto, you know, large problems, including, you know, carbon capture at a large scale and other things. But this is by far and away the most important job I've ever had. And the reason it's the most important job is so much is at stake if we're not successful. And so I'm highly motivated. You know, I was highly motivated to put the team together. I remain highly motivated because I'm aware on almost a daily basis of how the threat vectors are evolving and how much more sophisticated they're becoming. And I look at the fundamental math and fundamental physics that are needed to address these evolving threat vectors. And I realize that we're likely the only team, you know, certainly the only public team out there that has the capabilities and expertise that's needed to address these challenges. And as I said earlier, these, you know, if our adversaries compromise our U.S. manufacturing base, that blows our economy up. And, you know, I know we have questions coming up later about the titanium economy, but when I look at the features of the titanium economy, you know, I'm all in. But what I see as the major gap is cybersecurity, because the nation that secures its manufacturing base is the nation that's going to remain the strongest in a globally competitive way. So we might talk about that later, but it is, you know, I did not start the life as a cybersecurity expert. I started life, if you will, as a, you know, a PhD in biophysics. But, you know, life happens and, you know, you keep learning, you keep adapting, and, you know, new opportunities arise as a function of that.
That's right. And Dr. Grimes, you mentioned about the SIMANI team, and that takes me to my next question. As you mentioned, that the reason the SIMANI is so uniquely positioned to address the cybersecurity challenges within the U.S. manufacturing sector is the expertise and the talent that you have been put together. Now, you work with the industrial sector, the U.S. manufacturing sector, which we also refer to as the titanium economy, which every now and then grapples with this challenge of attracting the right talent, right? So for the benefit of our listeners, could you shed some light on how you were able to put together such a good team at SIMANI in such a short duration?
Yeah, during the formation of, you know, so the DOE writes what's called a FOA, Funding Opportunity Announcement, and a bunch of people across the country, you know, start to think about how they're going to write a proposal to win that grant. It's a big grant. It's, you know, over $100 million contract in when all is said and done. And, you know, so I worked with multiple people from the national labs, multiple leaders from universities across the country, you know, to get to form the, what I was hoping at the time and proved to be the case, the most competitive team, you know, to go and win, you know, this particular contract. So, you know, it was a lot of phone calls, you know, long days, as my wife would assure you. And, you know, it basically was about building a team, building a group of people that could really, you know, roll up their sleeves and get to serious work and have fun at the same time. You know, it's a daunting problem, most important work I've ever done in my life, as I've indicated, but, you know, we also have to have fun. And we created a working environment that where we really trusted each other. We were, you know, we worked towards a common goal or a common enemy, if you will. You know, we had a rallying cry, you know, early on, you know, one team, one fight, because we understood the magnitude of the fight. And I selected people as leaders on my team who understood the fight and understood what was needed to engage and win in that fight. So getting people organized around, you know, the approach, but having the intellectual freedom to, you know, debate what that right approach is, proved to be, you know, radically important for us in our success. So I give all of our credit, you know, to the team, because it's really their expertise and their capabilities that have allowed the success that we've been able to demonstrate.
Right. And Dr. Grimes, final question. We've already mentioned the titanium economy a few times during this conversation. And Samini is putting together this partnership ecosystem, which will have nearly 50 members, if I'm not wrong, across industry, some powerhouse universities, some nonprofits, some innovation institutes. How are you envisioning that once this ecosystem comes together, how will it shape the future of this titanium economy?
I'm hoping, quite honestly, that this podcast will help get Samini some visibility within the companies that comprise, you know, the titanium economy. I hope it'll get some visibility into the authors of the book, you know, on the titanium economy, because I'd love to have connective tissue there. And, you know, the reason I'd like to have connective tissue there is that, you know, A, we are a public-private partnership, so we need partners. And I see the participants and the doers, if you will, in the titanium economy to be prime partners because of their intellectual posture that they already have. Again, what I'll mention, if you look at the tenets of, you know, what makes a company a member of the titanium economy, you know, all of those things make a tremendous amount of sense. The one thing that I would add, and I hope people will understand, is that, you know, it's great to digitize. It's great to, you know, lean forward. It's great to do all those things. All those things, you know, can potentially be almost meaningless if you're not secure to market. And that's what we're in business to do, is help you be secure to market. You don't have to start at the very beginning with us. We bring companies on board all the time. You know, we've got active projects right now on, you know, a major energy controller that's used, you know, by a U.S. company, but all across the globe, I should say, on, you know, on wind turbines, for instance. How do we secure that? Think about an adversary that, you know, about going into the U.S. wind, all those turbines, thousands of turbines out there, and realize that, you know, you can just shut those guys down with a cyber breach. So we're working with that company to make sure that doesn't happen. We're working with another company that, you know, was ransomware attacked. They invested in all kinds of existing technology so it wouldn't happen again. It happened again. And that's when they came and found us. And so now we're working with them to deploy these secure defensible architectures that make it much, much more difficult for an adversary to you know, do it again to them. And we're proving that to be the case. Again, with formal methods, we can verify, you know, what we do, as opposed to just, you know, putting a nice pitch deck together and hope you buy, you know, our product. So I think that the major factor, you know, in our national security and our economic stability, again, is the country that secures to market and secures its manufacturing base is the country that's going to be the most resilient economy in the world far into the future. And I would love, literally love, to have connective tissue to the leading companies in the titanium economy to see what we can do together. Our tagline, by the way, is secure.together. And you know what that implies is that cybersecurity is absolutely a team sport. We can't do it by ourselves. As an institute, we have to have partners that are willing to roll up their sleeves and work with us to develop these next generation secure defensible architectures and deploy them in their environments for their own benefit. So that's what we're about.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Grimes, for your time today. It was a great conversation, and thank you for sharing all the insights from the innovation that you're driving at Thymony.
Lovely to talk with you, and please be in touch again, and we're happy to help.
Thank you for listening to the Titanium Economy Podcast. To learn more, share feedback, and stay up to date, please visit titaniumeconomy.com.